For the sermon, Mr. Ellis Loravia.
Well, if I could have, I should have played the piano today, too. I wanted to do something a little different today, because 'tain't contained in the Bible that we probably do not spend much time on, if at all. How many of you study or have read the Song of Solomon? Okay, some of you have read it. I don't know how many of you have studied it. But it's a song and a story about relationships, much like today's so-called popular music sings about, as well as country music. It shows a stark difference in relationships that are common between men and women in this world and the relationship that God says a man and woman should have. When did Solomon write this Song of Solomon? When did he write it? For he wrote 1,005 songs. He wrote 1,005. But God preserved this one. And I think for a reason, and I hope we can see that today. Because it's more than a song, it's a story. And it's more like an operetta. It certainly does not show Solomon's perfect love for one woman. For Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. I don't really understand the harem mentality or philosophy. I can't imagine from either point of view, either the male or the female. But anyway, I certainly do not understand it from a female perspective. Why would a woman want to wait around for a man to come and select her from 1,000 women? You know, even a king. Solomon obviously wanted many women to choose from. Did all the females really want to be there in the harem? Did they all want to be there? Among the 1,000 women, probably most of them did. Each one hoping they would be the next one chosen to be with the king. But I'm sure the harem was rife with envies and jealousies and mistrust and conflicts of all kinds. Was Solomon really looking for one faithful woman? If he were, he was certainly going about it in a very strange way. But Solomon said later in his summary of life in the book of Ecclesiastes, and we get some clues as to what Solomon was doing with his harem. He had determined to try everything and as many women as he possibly could. In a revelation as to what Solomon had done in his life, we can look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and get some idea of what Solomon was doing. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 13, thank you, sir. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 13, Solomon writes, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. Well, if you look at wisdom, there are certain things that he tried that he probably had to learn about later, was unwise in so doing, and he should have done it another way. But he said this sore travail has God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. You know, but why? Verse 16. And he said, I commune with my own heart. He didn't say I commune with God, and I asked God, you know, what should I do? What should I do in this matter, or what should I do in that matter? Or Now, initially he did, and we'll see that. But going on to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and we'll see his conclusions about some of these things. He said, I said in my heart, verse 1, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 1, I said in my heart, go to now or listen, because I will prove you with mirth, that is, wisdom. He was trying to prove the wisdom that God had given to him rather than accepting the wisdom, at least in certain cases. And certainly as far as the Song of Solomon, he didn't accept God's wisdom. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity or futility. I said of laughter, it's mad, and of mirth, what does it? I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, obviously to excess, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I built me houses. I planted vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. And I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that brings forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. Now, there weren't that many in Jerusalem before him. King David was in Jerusalem. There wasn't anyone else. I mean, there were other inhabitants, but certainly not Israel. He said in verse 8, I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers. And we'll see that was a part of the Song of Solomon. And the delights of the son of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remains with me. And whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. And if you only look to this life for fulfillment, that's the reality of it. I don't care how much you possess or how much you have, it's futility, it's vanity, it has some value, but it's not that which will make a person wise or complete or fulfill. It takes God's doing God's will to be able to have that completion. He said, and I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that comes after the king, even that which has been already done? Verse 13, he says, then I saw that wisdom excels folly as far as light excels darkness. And we'll see some of that wisdom later on applied in Ecclesiastes. And later in the book of Ecclesiastes, and in chapter 7, he tells us about what happened in the Song of Solomon, about having a harem of 1,000 women, and the findings in his study. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 26, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 26, he said, and I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets. you know, like prison chains. But he chained himself to that imprisonment with 1,000 women. And whoso pleases God, whoever is obedient to God, shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her, even as Solomon was. He was taken in trying to find one woman among 1,000. But that's not the way you look for a wife, is it? But that's the way he sought to do it. Behold, this have I found, says the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account. Verse 28, which yet my soul seeks, but I find not. I don't find one man among 1,000 have I found, or maybe one, but a woman among all those have I not found among 1,000. But you can't find it that way. You know, he was seeking to prove wisdom, but he didn't do it the right way. He didn't accept what God instructed him to do. You know, it certainly was not a faithful man. Solomon had succeeded his father David as ruler over Israel, but God had given Israel a time of peace and prosperity in the land during the time of Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 4. 1 Kings chapter 4. Israel and Judah had a time that they had never experienced before as this time. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 25 says, and Judah and Israel dwell safely at peace. There wasn't much peace during the entirety of the time that Israel was in the promised land. But now there was peace. Every man under his vine and under his fig tree. From Dan even to Beersheba, from north to south, all the days of Solomon. It was nearly like the conditions that shall exist in the millennium, with everyone under his vine and under his fig tree. In fact, God had appeared to Solomon in a dream and asked him, what shall I give you? After he began to rule. Solomon was very humble at the time and felt totally unprepared to rule over Israel. Here in 1 Kings chapter 3, 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. 1 Kings 3, verse 5. He says, in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask, what shall I give you? What can I provide for you? What can I give you? And Solomon said, you have showed unto your servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before you in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. And you have kept for him this great kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on the throne, his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord, my God, have you made my servant king instead of David, or I'm sorry, your servant king instead of David, my father, and I am but a little child. I'm just a young whippersnapper. I don't know how to go out or come in. I don't know how to rule over so great a people. And your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. And in verse 9, give therefore your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may choose between good and bad. For who is able to judge this so great a people? And God gave Solomon great wisdom and understanding, but we do not see it being exercised in this situation with the Song of Solomon, because all the wives and concubines led Solomon astray. But in 1 Kings chapter 4, again, 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. Says, "And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is of the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country, and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men," and he lists those, "and his fame was in all nations round about. And he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. But Solomon's pursuit of all these different approaches to trying to find out what's valuable and what isn't, and he got himself in a lot of trouble. And these women, God calls them strange women, because Solomon forgot God, who gave him this wisdom and understanding and who appointed him as king. And he went contrary to what God had commanded him to do, and in spite of his great wisdom, he separated himself from God, the worst situation that he could have done. The worst thing, the worst condition, even though God had appeared to Solomon twice. So we see what occurred. We see what occurred with all these women and concubines that Solomon had placed in his harem. In 1 Kings chapter 11, 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "But King Solomon loved," and this word here, loved, is Ahab. It's not really love, but it's placed his affection or lust on others, on these women. "King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh," even the daughter of Pharaoh, "women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the children of Israel, 'You shall not go into them. You shall not take them, neither shall they come into you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods.' But Solomon claved unto these in his affection." It says love, but it's not really love. "And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father." Then in verse 9, "And the Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned away from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice." God appeared to him twice. "And had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he kept not that which the Lord commanded." But you know, this illustrates what can happen to a person, regardless of their intelligence, regardless of their wisdom, regardless of their understanding, but must also obey God. I don't care how smart a person is, if they don't obey God, it doesn't go anywhere to complete the person in becoming like God. You know, even though what God gave to Solomon was so very great, but without obedience to God, it's all for naught. It's all for no value. But all of what Solomon did is not the subject of the Song of Solomon. You know, obviously the king could go into his harem and select whatever woman he wanted among the thousand. whenever he desired, day or night. This is a song, it's really an operetta. Probably all of you are familiar with an operetta, about what happens in a harem and what happened to King Solomon. And the king probably had scouts who were continually looking for the most desirable women of the land and to add them to his harem, always out scouting and looking. But all of these women were vying to be selected by the king for his pleasure, all except one. All except one. This song is basically about the envies and the jealousies and the conspiracies of these women and the steadfastness of one woman. The steadfastness of one woman who was devoted to one man. We won't go over every scripture because of time and also because of the bedroom language. But I will highlight some of the major parts of the Song of Solomon. This song is much like the Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, such as the Pirates of Penzance. Probably many of you are familiar with the Pirates of Penzance. It's much like that, with which you may be familiar. All the intrigue and all of the machinations of the human mind and all the things they get involved in, trying to have excitement and fun and pleasure and good times. And we see how it all turns out. But the young woman who was faithful waited for the love of her life to come and rescue her. And we see some of the chatter of the women in the harem in the first part of the Song of Solomon. The first part of Song of Solomon, we see the chatter that was going on. In chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, you know, the operetta opens in the harem. And the women who were waiting for the king to come, they were preening themselves. They were practicing their lines, each one trying to outdo the other verbally and in their appearance. Each one tried to have the best appearance, their hair coiffed, the clothing, jewels, perfumes, and seductiveness. They were all prepared. The only would be one at a time, but they were all prepared, all seeking to be up front. You know how people push themselves up front when they want to be first in line. Then in verse 5, we see the scene changes, and we see a young woman who is very much out of place, a Shulamite woman of the tribe of Issachar up from the north. A young woman who had been mistreated by her brothers, mistreated as a child, but she's the heroine of the Song of Solomon. Then in verses 6 and 7, she was probably made to oversee the sheep at her home, and so doing, she became very tanned. She was obviously beautiful, but apparently was abused and mistreated as a child. But she sorely misses the love of her life. She did not want to be in the king's harem, but she had no choice. They conscripted her. They placed her there. They didn't ask her if she wanted to be there. They just placed her there. She didn't want to be in the king's harem, but had no choice. But the other women teased her about her desires and not having desires for the king. Then in verses 8 through 13, King Solomon enters. King Solomon enters the harem. And he pays the young girl a compliment, but notices she's not dressed like the other women. She doesn't have her hair coiffed like the other women. She wasn't out front to meet him and to tell him, you know, how great she was. So he promises then to provide her because he seeks her out in this operetta. And he promises to provide her all the oils and perfumes and royal clothing for her benefit and for his desires. Then in verses 14 through 17, she ignores the attention of the king. This young woman ignores the attention of the king and concentrates on the true love of her life. Solomon tries to turn on all of his charm, but she's unimpressed, ignoring his attention. Then in chapter 2, verses 1 through 6, she states that she's just a country girl who wants to return home to her love. That's first and foremost with her. She's not interested in being with the king. Then verse 7, then she addresses the other women in the harem, relating that they're making a silly mistake, trying to be noticed, trying to turn men on, seeking to appeal to the king. And her soliloquy states that this is not what women are for. This is not what love is all about. She stated, you're to save yourself for one man. You're to save yourself for one man, one whom you love and who loves you and is willing to marry you, is betrothed to you. Then in chapter 2, verses 8 through 17, she wants to be rescued from the harem, but fears what the king's men might do to her and to her betrothed. Then she dreams that she is back home and with the one whom she loves. In her dream, he comes and rescues her, no doubt on his white horse. Then in chapter 3, verse 2, the dream seems so real that she even goes out seeking for him, out into the city. She goes out seeking for her betrothed. She must have felt much like the Apostle Paul when God revealed such revelations to him. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, you know, obviously these were far greater revelations than what she had, but her mind was on her betrothed. It wasn't on the king. She had no interest in the king. And as these things were revealed to the Apostle Paul, in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 1, Apostle Paul says, it's not expedient for me to doubtless to glory. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. Because I know a man in Christ above 14 years ago, where in the body I cannot tell, or whether out of the body I cannot tell. But God knows, and such a one caught up to me into the third heaven. There's probably a vision, a dream. And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, and God knows. And he was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words, which is not lawful for a man to utter. That's not really in the same category as the Apostle Paul, but she had a dream that she wanted to fulfill with her betrothed, and it was so meaningful to her. And it was so meaningful that she felt that it was real. And so she went out to search for him. In Song of Solomon chapter 3, Song of Solomon chapter 3, and verse 5, and again, she warns the other women, don't waste yourselves. Don't waste your lives. If only young people could understand this message, you know, as well as all adults. This young woman was telling the other women, this is not what being male and female is all about. There's so much more that God intended. Not only in this mortal life between a man and a woman, one woman, in marriage, but also in the kingdom of God. Then in verses 6 through 10, now Solomon returns to the harem, and he comes to woo her again. probably accompanied by strong men who they carry the king on this elevated chair. He didn't even have to walk, which would probably have been better for his health. But he didn't walk. They carried him on an elevated chair with bodyguards, even as Solomon seeks to fulfill himself and influence this young woman. You know, it's quite a setting. Then in verse 11, and every time he married another woman, and he was married 700 times, his own mother, Bathsheba, crowned him during another ceremony. It certainly must have gotten monotonous. But Solomon loved no women, but wanted to dominate them and fulfill his own desires. Then in chapter 4, verses 1 through 7, Solomon turns on the charm once again, trying to influence her, seeking to influence this woman to favor him, to come after him. The other women were affected by his eloquent words, but not this one woman. Then in chapter 4, verses 8 through 16, she recounts what the love of her life has said to her, the one whom she is betrothed to and will marry. The words were not for anyone else. She knows who she is, and even as their betrothed knows who he is and who they are and what they want to do. Then in chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, there's another dream, or perhaps her love had really come to rescue her. She thought it was real. Apparently, in pursuit of her love, the king's guards caught her out on the streets looking for her betrothed, and in her resistance, she was injured. And in chapter 5, verses 8 through 16, again, once she is returned to the harem, she addresses the women. She asks for help to find her betrothed. She describes him in her eyes and heart, and we see how much she adores and cherishes him. The women are quite impressed. In chapter 5, verses 11 through 16. Now, this is her perception of her love, and, you know, it's quite demonstrative. In Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verse 11. His head is as the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven. His eyes are as the eyes of doves by the rivers of water, washed with milk, goat's milk, I guess, and fitly set. His cheeks are as a bed of spices, or as sweet flowers, his lips like lilies, dropping sweet-smelling myrrh. His hands are as gold rings set with a beryl. His belly is as bright ivory overlaid with sapphires. His legs are as pillars of marble set upon sockets of fine gold. His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the tall cedars of Lebanon. His mouth is most sweet. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. As she gave her perspective of what her betrothed was like, may seem too poetic for some or overdone, but it illustrates her love and her appreciation of her betrothed. Then in chapter 6, verses 1 through 3, the women ask the question, well, where is he? You know, where is he? And she answers. And then verse 4, Solomon tries again. The sweet lines always worked before for him. He couldn't understand this young woman wanting nothing to do with him. After all, he was the epitome of what every woman should want, or so he thought. Then in verse 8, chapter 6, verse 8, Solomon was showing the waiting list of women who wanted to be in his harem and could not understand this young woman. Chapter 6, verse 8, he says, there are 70 queens. 70 queens. That's 80 queens, he says, that are waiting in line. And 40 concubines. And virgins without number, trying to influence her with his waiting list. But it had no impact. Then in verse 10, the women take up a refrain, because there were probably a lot of songs that were sung in this sense, because he had a lot of men and women singers, and this was probably a refrain or a chorus that they sang. They take up a refrain in this song. Then in verse 11, the young woman dreams of being home and her simple existence. Then in verse 12, she recounts how she was taken captive by the king's men and brought to his harem. Then in chapter 6, verse 13, perhaps this part of the song was a dance. This may have been a dance. Two companies, men and women, for male and women did not, or male and female did not dance together. Then going on to chapter 7, we see a chorus of men and women singing again. Chapter 7, verse 1 through 5. Now the other women were saying, you really are a beautiful woman, but your character is best of all. And what is God telling us here? That he made both men and women and both to be attracted to one another, but only one man and one woman and one another in marriage. Then in chapter 7, verses 6 through 10, Solomon tries yet once again, but the young woman will not yield herself to Solomon. She will not accept his misplaced affection. And in chapter 7, verse 10 through 13, the young woman would not compromise. She knew she was her beloved's, and his desire was toward her. So she was returned to her rightful place in the countryside and to her love. In chapter 8, verse 4, chapter 8, verse 4, she gave a final warning to the women of the other women of the harem. Her message was not to stir up love until it is time to be with one man whom you will marry. Chapter 8, verse 4. She says, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, the other women in the harem, that you stir not up, nor awake your love until he please, until you found the right person. Don't just do as Solomon did. Young women, you know, don't awake your passions, you know, too early. Do not stir up love before the time. But today, young people want to stir up love far before the time, or affection, or lust, or, you know, whatever you might call it, but it's not really love. In verse 11, Solomon eventually hires out his harem. In chapter 8, verse 11, it says, Solomon had a vineyard, speaking of his harem, at Baal Hamon. Now, he had a literal vineyard, but he let out the vineyard unto keepers. Everyone for his fruit there was to bring 1,000 pieces of silver. So he rented his harem, the women in his harem, to others. In verse 12, this young woman and her husband, her betrothed, which she knew was only for him. Now this is a song of Solomon. It certainly has a lot of lust, use of parts of the body, et cetera, et cetera. But that isn't what the story is really about, and that's not why God preserved it. There are many lessons there. But the operetta-like story, it may seem trite or unimportant and maybe even foolish. But God included it in the Bible for a reason, for it illustrates the foolishness of Solomon in experimenting with 1,000 women. He went from his humble beginnings to following all these women, different women and their gods. Just as he did with gardens and streams and fruit trees and everything, he'd been better to have stayed with the gardens and fruit trees and the pools of water. In the end, when God inspired the book of Ecclesiastes through Solomon, we see in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, as Solomon grew older and began to think about what he had done. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9, the conclusion he came to. But look at all the horrendous experiences that he went through. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9. He says, "Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your life, of your vanity or your temporal life, your mortal life, which he has given you under the sun, all the days of your vanity. For that is your portion in this life and in their labor which you take under the sun." But it took all that for Solomon to come to that conclusion. And of course, the final conclusion he came to in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of a person. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. This also relates to each of us, whether we are married now, divorced, or have lost a husband. It shows to us the sanctity of marriage and the fidelity that must ensue. It also relates to Christ and the church. And since we're coming to the Feast of Trumpets in a few days, it's very appropriate, because Christ is preparing a bride for himself. This time, not a nation that will turn away as Israel did. God married Israel, and he was everything to Israel. He provided everything: safety, welfare, rain, goods, food, everything. Even preserving while they were wandering in the wilderness, the clothes on their back and the shoes on their feet. He provided everything, but they rejected him, and Christ had to finally divorce Israel. But Christ is preparing a bride that is as the young woman in the Song of Solomon, a faithful wife who awaits her husband. In Ephesians chapter 5, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 24. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 24. It says, therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loves the church and gave himself for it. We see how much he wanted a bride. one that he gave himself for, paid the penalty for each and every one of us, so we could become his bride. In verse 26, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So Christ is preparing his bride that he shall marry when he comes. And I think the lessons that we can see in the Song of Solomon, the things that Solomon experienced, that one young woman experienced, that the other 999 experienced, and what Solomon had to come to with all of his experimentation of all the thousand women, that you should live peaceably and joyfully with the wife of your youth, one wife. And as Christ is preparing a bride, not one that does not have the honesty and integrity and fidelity, but one who is to be without sin, and that Christ will prepare for his coming and will marry that bride.